J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Mexico, here we come. Gah! Mexico, here we come. Gah! Mexico, here we come. Mexico, here we come. Mexico, here we come.
Oh my goodness, I cannot believe this. Did you see that, man? Oh my God, she got her tongue onto the beach. Baby, with all that cellulite you got going on down there, you need to wear a beach blanket, not a beach towel, okay? Ooh, that gusto sandalist, you know that girl can handle it. Eating that Twinkie like a big old witch, with a look in your eye like you want some fried fish. She like to eat at the buffet spot, she will eat everything, even crumbs and drops, macaroni and cheese. She ate the whole pot, she was in Jalupa Loca. She eat chicken by the truck, hams like what, baby talk your gut, I think I sing it again. She eat chicken by the truck, hams like what, all night long. You never.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Thursday, May 5th, 2022, 196 days remaining in our American democratic system as we have known it. How you doing, kids? I'm JC. You're at jconline.com. We have a little treat for you. We're going to go back to 1990 at Casa Gallardo Westport because today, of course, is Cinco de Mayo. And we had a just one of those moments, because you plan and you have all, you got an entire staff of people working on stuff and you have all these great ideas and brainstorming sessions. And then just something organically just pops right out of the ground that you had no idea was going to take place. And you really have to enjoy those moments. And we'll get to that towards the end of today's podcast. All right. Today is Cinco de Mayo, more popular in the United States than it is in Mexico, where it's not even a national holiday, and it's been Drinco de Mayo since the beer companies started using it to market their products back in the 1980s. I remember when I got to St. Louis in 1984 at KG, and I got to town on Memorial Day, so we didn't have a chance to do it. But the next year, 1985, I said, it was like mid-March or something, and I remember saying to the guys, are we planning anything for Cinco de Mayo? And they all sort of looked at me like, well, what do you mean? What? So even in St. Louis, the whole idea of Cinco de Mayo didn't really kick in until well into the 80s. And if you order a chimichanga today somewhere, it actually translates into thingamajig. And even though they're considered to be Mexican food, they actually originated in Tucson, Arizona. This is the 61st anniversary of Alan Shepard going into outer space, the first American in space. Now, you may remember they sent Ham, the chimp, up there. It was just basically, you're going to get in a rocket, we're going to send you up, and you're going to come straight down and just make sure that, some sort of mammal that's as close as we can get to an American human being doesn't suffer any sort of, I think there were radiation issues, all that sort of stuff. So they sent Ham straight up, straight down. He made it on the cover of Life magazine back in 1961. And then it was Alan Shepard's turn. Same thing, straight up, straight down. Gus Grissom, same thing, straight up, straight down. In Gus Grissom's case, all the way to the floor of the ocean, as far as his space capsule is concerned. But the guy with the balls was John Glenn, because that's when they said, we're not going to just send you straight up and straight down. We're sending you up. You're going to go around the Earth three times, and then we're going to bring you down. And I still think that anybody who agreed to that had to be half nuts, but John Glenn was the guy. Adele is 34 years old today. Can you imagine being 34 years old and having that amount of money? Yikes. Tina Yothers, the true star of Family Ties, 49. Brian Williams, you got to wonder whether he is ever going to get another serious crack at journalism, you know, being on at 11 o'clock at night on MSNBC. I don't think it was his idea of a good time, and he just recently quit that gig. But where and when and how would he resurface? I just don't know if anybody is going to give him the crack. Kurt Loder, the MTV news legend, get this, is 77 years old. He was a lot older than anybody thought he was when he was doing the news on MTV. Michael Palin, 79, from Monty Python. People still hate the Houston Astros for all the cheating they have done over recent years. And Jose Altuve, one of the guys at the center of the whole thing, and you can probably see this somewhere on YouTube or something, but last night, you know, sometimes a guy, a pitcher winds up, here's a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, guy fouls it off onto his shin or his knee or the top of his foot, extremely, extremely painful. Last night, Jose Altuve fouled one right into his dick, and here the announcers try to tiptoe their way around that. Well, he was hit in the groin area. No, he wasn't. He was hit in the junk. Jose was like, no, please, just go back to hitting me in the head. I did. Late night tonight, Chris Pratt's on with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Kevin Hart. Mike Birbiglia is hosting because Kimmel's got COVID. Stephen Colbert's got Daniel Craig. Benedict Cumberbatch and Elizabeth Olsen on with James Corden. Seth Meyers has Hugh Jackman. Also, The Staircase on HBO Max starting today. This is Colin Firth and Toni Collette. Supposed to be pretty good. Colin Firth, by the way, went to middle school and I think part of high school in the Chesterfield area. A lot of people are unaware that he's British, but it's a long story that I don't have time to go into right now. And today is also the series premiere of something called The Pendaphorate. The Pendaphorate. It's on Netflix. Mike Myers, as a Canadian journalist, who tries to find out the truth about the world's oldest and most influential secret society, who are also played by Mike Myers. The rest of the cast, Ken Jeong, Keegan-Michael Key, and Rob Lowe. Mike Myers also seeming to indicate that there is a fourth Austin Powers movie in the works. Kim Cattrall saying that she decided to leave Sex and the City because they wanted to give her a storyline where she received unsolicited dick pics from Miranda's son. She felt that didn't offer her character any growth. She can spew out stories all she wants. She didn't like the people, they didn't like her, and she wanted too much money. Ray J is insisting that it was Kris Jenner, the Kardashians' mom, who engineered the whole release of Kim's sex tape. She's denying it. Amber Heard took the witness stand yesterday, said the first time Johnny Depp hit her is when she laughed at his wino fever tattoo. She also talked about the supposed body cavity search he gave her when he thought she was hiding his coke. And TMZ posted a picture of the weapon Dave Chappelle's attacker was brandishing Tuesday night. It was a fake gun with a knife blade sticking out of the barrel. Also, this idiot, it turns out, is a wannabe rapper, and he released a song in 2020 that he even named after Dave Chappelle. What a fucking psycho. Every year, it seems to get just a little bit worse with regard to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And in the final analysis, what does it really mean? I mean, for a long time, I think that people were like, oh, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, oh my gosh. And because of the way they've been doing things, the image of the Rock Hall has really been tarnished over the last decade or so, and people are just laughing at it now. And they did absolutely nothing to improve their image yesterday when it was announced that, and trust me, I like Dolly Parton. I interviewed her in 1988, one-on-one out in Los Angeles. She's the sweetest person ever. She was 44 at the time. Make up your own jokes for that. But she was 44. She was just the sweetest, nicest, friendliest, funniest person you'd ever want to meet. I mean, when it comes right down to it, who doesn't like Dolly Parton? But we're talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Now you throw in Lionel Richie, Carly Simon, Harry Belafonte, and I really like Eminem. I think it's one of, probably the only rap act that I really enjoy. I think he's a riot, by the way. I got nothing against the Eurythmics going in. It does sort of seem like their time on the charts and their time of even existence, really, was pretty short. I mean, the Rock Hall up until now has been pretty good about the fact that you really got to have a solid, substantial, long-term act to be able to be considered for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Eurythmics were around for, what, a couple of years? They had a couple of hit songs? Annie Lennox was really snotty to me in an interview. And I think she's immensely talented. I saw her, she opened for Sting out at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. It's maybe, oh my gosh, probably 14, 15 years ago. And she was a remarkable performer. But let's get serious here. People are just laughing at the Rock Hall now. And maybe if they change the name to like the American Music Hall of Fame or something like that, then maybe you got something. But Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, and Harry Belafonte, all great performers in their own individual universes. And then, like I said, you look at the legitimate rock and roll acts that have been around and really deserve to be recognized by being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that have been omitted. That's where the whole thing gets even more intolerable. Because if you're the Moody Blues, if you're Warren Zevon, Jethro Tull, Grand Funk, Little Feat, The Guess Who, Emerson, Lake, and fucking Palmer, the Doobie Brothers, The Cars, Three Dog Night. If you're one of those acts and you're still not in and you're watching Dolly Parton, Lionel Richie, Carly Simon, and Harry Belafonte go in, I mean, come on. What are we talking about here, folks? Jesus. The weather obviously could not be crappier, but did you look ahead to next week? You see this? It's like 90 or low 90s almost every day next week. That starts on Monday and then goes through as far as the eye can see until next week. Going to be interesting. Our first taste of the real, real hot, humid weather in St. Louis. Our little mini motto here on the podcast is we only do politics when it is absolutely unavoidable. And it is today, for reasons that will become obvious here in just a minute. Continuing fallout from the leak from the Supreme Court. Isn't it interesting that they seem more interesting in tracking down who made the leak than they are in defending this position that three Supreme Court justices sat under oath in front of Congress during the Trump administration and flat out lied about their position on abortion? All three of them said, hey, it's settled law. Next question. And people are like, okay, it's settled law. Roe v. Wade, it's not something that this particular Supreme Court justice nominee is interested in going back and regurgitating. And all three of them are on the list of justices who will support the overturning of Roe v. Wade. But they're more interested trying to find that guy who made the leak. You know, every Supreme Court justice has it's either four or six, what they call clerks or assistants. So there's fewer than 40 of them. And, you know, presumably it's one of those, I think it's 38 clerks who made the leak. However, if you look at one of those, I'm not going to even name the channel, but it's one of those news channels that spews out all this conspiracy theory stuff and QAnon crap and everything like that. And they think, as they said on their show the other night, that it's Ketanji who did it. Ketanji, who isn't even in, she's not even sworn in yet as Supreme Court Justice. I doubt she knows what's going on in the inner workings of the Supreme Court before she even gets fitted for the robe and takes the job and gets sworn in. I don't know, but Yeah, it was her. It was definitely her. In the meantime, the message seems awfully clear, and it's been clear for a long time, but it's getting really, really sharply into focus these days. As stated by Mary Elizabeth Coleman, this is a crackpot representative from the state of Missouri who's tried to stop everything. She's got six kids, and she basically says, unless you're married, you're not allowed to have sex. And as you can see from this brood I have here, we're not very crazy about contraception either. She introduced a law, a bill, in the Missouri State House, I don't know how many months ago it was, but it was recently, where once abortion is banned in the state of Missouri, and Missouri is on the list of states that would ban abortions if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and it appears that's the case. So now you're a woman in the state of Missouri, and you need an abortion. And you start looking around the states, and you go, okay, maybe Illinois. Let me go over there, and I'll take care of business over there. According to Mary Elizabeth Coleman, the state of Missouri, you could now be prosecuted for having an abortion, even though it didn't happen in the state of Missouri. Texas has one of those, too, where it's like, okay, you look around Texas, they made it almost impossible to have an abortion down there. And so if you go to the nearest state where it is available, which is Colorado, you go up there, you have a safe, legal abortion, and you come back, and now you are under arrest. So it's one thing to say, we believe that life begins when the guy gets the girl's phone number at the bar, so you can't have an abortion. But at the same time, they're also trying to ban contraception. And, of course, they're also, this has been going on for a long time, eliminating social programs for low-income women and families who aren't able to financially support the baby once it's born. So they got you coming from all angles. It's like, can't have an abortion. We're limiting your access to contraceptives. And if you leave the state and come back, we got you for that too. It's comprehensive. I mean, I'll give them that. They have the T's crossed and the I's dotted. Keep in mind, somewhere between 70 and 80% of Americans believe that Roe v. Wade should be left alone, and that includes a lot of Republicans. So you have to say to yourself, why, when the country has never been more divided, and I lived through Vietnam, I was in college during Vietnam, so trust me, I knew what the hell was going on with Vietnam, and I never thought that I would live to say that the United States of America were more divided than during the Vietnam era, but it's clearly the case now. So if that is the case, and it is, why would the Supreme Court come along with this and say, oh, you think you're divided now? Ha! Brett Kavanaugh said, hold my keg. Good morning, everybody. Wait till we get to this Roe v. Wade thing. It's almost like they're throwing gasoline on the fire. And let's be honest, some people, you know, this isn't really, even to be honest with you, a political discussion. This is a religious discussion because you know where all of this is coming from. It's not really coming from Republicans. It's coming from the Christian right. These fucking church people, as George Carlin once referred to them, have gotten their hands on the steering wheel and are steering the Republican Party, or at least most of it. Even Barry Goldwater, back in the early 1960s, said, don't let these church people, don't let these ministers get a hold of our United States government, because they want it, and they'll get it too, and if they get it, see ya later. And that was Barry fucking Goldwater who said that. All right. That's all for that. You've heard me talk about my friend Christina, who was a Creve Coeur school teacher for many, many years, and ran into some just plain awful family issues. Her daughter and my daughter were best friends. We lived right down the street from one another. And some, you know, truly horrific stuff happened in her family. And she said, you know what? I'm ready to retire. I could do that. Sold everything, liquidated everything, sold her house, cashed in all of her chips, every single one she could find, took the money, grabbed her daughter and said, moving to Spain. And during the pandemic, especially the early days of COVID, we had Christina on the air a couple of times, as a matter of fact, on the show and then subsequently on the podcast. And she's over there now, been over there for a couple of years now, and probably isn't coming back. Let's just put it that way. And one of the reasons we had her on the air during COVID was because, as you know, if you were really paying attention, so much of the stuff that we ended up dealing with here in our country started in Europe and made its way over here. Sometimes it took like, you know, 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks. But what was happening in places like England and Spain and Italy and stuff like that, all that stuff ended up here in a month or two. So we talk, you know, anyhow, but talked to her again yesterday. And in Spain, 87% of the population double vaccinated. So even though we're hearing stuff about variants that are causing problems and causing people to wear masks again in parts of Europe, and people are wondering, oh my gosh, it looks like maybe I shouldn't have thrown away my mask after all. We might have another situation here in this country where the double vaccination rate is so much lower. So it really does make sense to pay attention a little bit to what's going on over there. So anyhow, they're in a situation where got to have a mask on again when you're indoors in a large group. So if you go to a concert or something like that, or over there, you know, a soccer game or something, you know, put the mask on. And people don't like it, but they're doing it. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. But their attitude about it over there is a little bit different here, and it's not a political issue like it is here. Also, and I'm warning you ahead of time, this is really, really difficult to talk about. In her building, and she lives in a, I guess it's sort of like a condo. I will tell you this, you go up to her, I think it's her third floor apartment, and you look out off her deck, and you can see the coast of Africa. It's just absolutely beautiful. She keeps inviting me to come over, and I'm going to do it as soon as I can figure out how to make it work. But gosh, when you got a place to stay, you got your room and board taken care of, you can't pass up an opportunity like that. I've always wanted to go there anyhow, and I thought I would go to Barcelona, but she's in another area down near the Rock of Gibraltar. But anyhow, in their apartment building, their condo, whatever it is, they had some room, I guess. So they have brought in some Ukrainian families, and they're letting them stay there. They're sort of sponsoring their entrance, if you will, into the country. And so she's got a couple of Ukraine families who are living right beneath her in her building. This family, this one particular family, was living in an underground bunker for 5 weeks with limited access to necessities. 5 weeks underground in a bunker, and then finally got out, went to Poland, and then ended up in Spain via Poland. They had to walk 7 hours to get to Poland, walking with kids, including a five-year-old, for 7 hours. Like I said, then they picked up sponsors, and they ended up in Spain. One of the family members is a five-year-old little boy, 5 years old. And Christina told me that the family was showing her pictures that they took of the conditions in the bunker and the conditions in the town and the subsequent seven-hour walk to Poland. And she said that it's not like anything else she has ever seen. I was going to say, well, forward them to me. She's like, you do not want to see these. You don't want to see these. You'll have nightmares. Trust me, you don't want to see what I have seen. The most heartbreaking part of the story is that the five-year-old little boy, and I got goosebumps, just chills thinking about this. Oh, man. My friend Christina lives not too far from an airport, and every time a plane flies over, the little boy runs for cover. Kid is terrified of anything flying in the air. And she's not even able to communicate with him very well because the family doesn't speak any English. And she speaks English and now Spanish too, because that's where she's living. And it's really, really difficult to communicate with the family and with this little boy. But he is absolutely terrified of airplanes. You wonder whether a five-year-old kid can ever overcome anything like this and go on to any semblance of a normal life. Stuff is just heartbreaking. All right, enough. I know, JC, happy thoughts. It's Cinco de Mayo.
You know what I love about tacos?
What's that? Everything. Do tacos get any more kick butt than this?
Oh, they're about to. All right, new at Taco Town. We take a crunchy all-beef taco, smother it in nacho cheese, lettuce, tomato, and our special Southwestern sauce. Then we wrap it in a soft flour tortilla with a layer of refried beans in between.
Sweet.
Then we wrap that in a savory corn tortilla with a middle layer of Monterey Jack cheese.
Awesome!
And it gets even awesomer when we take a deep-fried gordita shell, smear on a layer of our special guacamolito sauce, and wrap that around the outside.
This is pretty big.
It gets bigger because we bake it in a corn husk filled with pico de gallo, then wrap that in an authentic Parisian crepe filled with egg, Gruyere, merguez sausage, and portobello mushrooms.
Can I eat it now?
Sure. But not before we take the whole thing and wrap that in a Chicago-style deep-dish meat lover's pizza.
Pizza? Now that's what I call a taco.
Well, it's not a Taco Town taco until we roll it up in a blueberry pancake, dip it in batter, and deep-fry it until it's golden brown. Then we serve it all in a commemorative tote bag filled with spicy vegetarian chili. It's 15 great tastes all rolled into one.
Taco Town!
The new Pizza Crepe Taco Pancake Chili Bag. Only at Taco Town.
Taco Town!
Yardy Summer from Mexico. A smarty Finister or Coke and Navajo. Part of fence, my cat's little low. Finger a Navajo. Früher lebt ich noch im Wilden Westen. Gold zu finden war mein großes Ziel. Bis ich eines Tages den Indianern in die roten Hände fiel. Der Navajo, der kennt kein Scherz. Er wollte nur mein Gold.
Okay, everybody sing. Let him hear you outside.
Ja, 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 ja. Die Sonne von Mexiko. Das war die wildeste Rothaut der Navajo.
I've been playing that for years, and I still have no idea what to make of it. The guy's got a banjo, a woodblock, whatever that thing is that goes. It's like they just looked around the music room and picked up one of everything they could find. Okay, because this is Cinco de Mayo, we flash back to the year 1990, and we were doing the old Breakfast Club on the classic rock station 93.7 KSD. And all we knew that day was that Tommy Shaw of Styx was going to come in the studio, and he was going to bring his guitar, and he was sort of like a product spokesperson for a drug rehab place, although it was very ticklish the way we were discussing it. He sort of didn't want to necessarily come right out and say that he was doing that, but it was clear that's why he was in town. So we let him, you know, pump that whole thing a little bit, and then we were like, well, pick up the guitar and let's have some fun. Well, he did, as you'll hear. And then when that was over and the segment was done, he said, I heard you guys saying that you're doing another show today. You guys work twice. I go, oh, it's just a special thing for Cinco de Mayo. We got this place over at Westport, and we're going to do a noon show out there for an hour or two, and there'll be a big crowd, and everybody's going to be, you know, eating chips and salsa and drinking tequila. It'll be a great time. He goes, well, I could come out there with you. We're like, what? What? You'll come out with us? He's like, yeah, sure, I'll bring the guitar, and yeah, I'll just meet you out there. Sure enough, we set up, we get the show started, we managed to find a drummer, and out walks Tommy Shaw with a guitar. We just couldn't even believe what was happening. And so what you're going to hear here is the studio part of things that was happening, and then there will be an edit in the segment, and you'll hear how it sounded out at Casa Gallardo. 1990, you want to talk about an acid flashback here on Cinco de Mayo.
So these songs were important to me in the early days, and I still get... I still have people come to me and tell me, you know, that Crystal Ball was a very important song for them, and this song was one of those gifts from me that I was sitting at my mother's house living in Alabama, and it just came to me, and I wrote it down. Wrote it so fast, I wrote it twice. You know, there was enough for two songs there. But so anyway,
Tommy Shaw.
And gaze the days through sleepless dreams, all alone and trapped in time, all alone and trapped in time. I wonder what tomorrow has perhaps I get a chance to look ahead and see. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball. Soon as I find myself a crystal ball.
Sound great.
God. Gotta have another one of these donuts.
So you get the that's where you get the energy, huh? And a warm St. Louis welcome for our guest today, Tommy Shaw. Yeah!
Thank you. All right. See, I love this. I got a couple of guys from California here. It's raining and they don't know what to do with this. You guys don't mind weather here, do you? Nah. So. Okay,
Tommy.
You guys doing okay?
Tommy.
Yeah.
Girls with guns.
Duck! Everybody hit the floor.
I haven't played this in about 10 years. I tell you now. Thank you. The reason I said everyone is because I don't remember how to play that one. Okay, any other requests before I play something? Damn Yankees.
Stairway to Heaven, what?
How about, so it takes some of the Damn Yankee stuff. I need my good buddy Jack Blades here, but I could do a little bit of... Okay. I need the rest of my band for that. Okay. Damn Yankees. Y'all want to hear... This is kind of unusual, but is anybody familiar with the Roy Orbison song called Crying?
Now, hold on a second here. Now, Roy Orbison had, he could hit four octaves or something. Isn't that right?
Well, no one can do it justice, but I'd like to give it a shot. All right?
Good. Tommy Shaw!
Because Roy Orbison, the first time I ever appeared on television, I did a Roy Orbison song when I was in the sixth grade.
What was it?
It was Pretty Woman. I dedicated it to my sixth grade teacher.
All right.
Tommy, do you need these dark glasses?
So, Mrs. Hinton, I'm going to dedicate this one to you, too. Yeah, do I need the glasses for that?
We have sunglasses if you want them. You can do a whole Roy Orbison thing. Here you go.
All right, y'all bear with me on this one. I got a label on this thing. Roy never had labels on his glasses. I was all right for a while. I could smile for a while. But when I saw you last night, you held my hand so tight. When we stopped to say hello, and though you wished me well, you couldn't tell that I'd been crying over you, crying over you. Then you said so long and left me standing all alone, alone and crying. I thought that I was over you, and it's true, so true. I love you even more than I did before, but darling, what can I do? You don't
Corcoran Podcast.